True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Domingo Santana, ooh, I wanna have ya. Tanaka's Fakata, Jag like Michael Walker. Polanco and Franco,
where do you go to ISO? Get into first place, check batted ball data and swinging strike rates. Raisins are shriveled grapes. Here's Adam's happy place.
Happy Kokomo Friday, and welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today, presented by Line & Kugels. More on their great variety of beverages later on in the podcast. July 30th, it's trade deadline day. We made it. Frank Stanfield joined by Scott White. It is way late here on the East Coast. It is after 1 a.m. when we're starting to record this podcast, so we apologize in advance for any dark takes, any after dark takes you may receive here today on the podcast. We're going to quickly run through all of these trades. There is a lot of them. We have week 19 sleepers, two start pitchers, the Furryometer. That's just the Worryometer on a Friday. Fantasy Justice and much more. You alive, Scott? How are you doing?
I'm alive. I do think it's worth pointing out to everybody that the reason we're starting so late is because we've been very busy reacting to a very busy day of trades. So there being only so many hours in a day and things taking the time they take to get done. Yeah, this is finally when we're getting started. And I will also warn you, I think it's fair to warn everybody, our usual level of preparation may not have gone into the show, may not have quite as many sleeper hitters and sleeper pitchers for you as I normally do. But we're going to do our best. We got a couple emergency podcasts out that are very good, I think, especially the Dodgers Nationals blockbuster, 18 minutes of analysis on that one. So we will talk about it here, but not going to go quite as in depth as we did in that one. So if you want the full breakdown, be sure to check out our emergency pod in the same podcast feed. You know, you just gotta click on a separate podcast.
Professional broadcaster Scott White with a great preamble to the podcast here. Again, we do have a Scherzer and Trey Turner to the Dodgers emergency podcast out, and we do have Anthony Rizzo to the Yankees, and that included a few bullpen notes as well. I know the Diego Castillo trade and the Brad Hand trade. Let's start with Max Scherzer and Trey Turner to the Dodgers for a haul of prospects, kind of. That includes catcher Kybert Ruiz, pitcher Josiah Gray, and two mid-range prospects who I didn't write down, but it's fine. For Max Scherzer, he's been great this year. He's got a 2.76 ERA, 0.89 whip. Does this change his value much, Scott?
Doesn't change his value much. I would just say that when Clayton Kershaw comes back and is already gearing up to come back from his forearm issue, one of David Price and Tony Gonsolin's going to have to go now. I think, given the fact that Tony Gonsolin was in the rotation first, and given the fact that David Price just had a pretty yucky start here on Thursday, my guess is Tony Gonsolin's staying in and David Price is going out, but it remains to be seen. I guess it's also possible that Julio Urias, they kind of ease up on him, and maybe there are some piggyback outings with Price or something like that.
David Price is 50% rostered. We could probably drop him, right?
Yep, probably.
They also probably.
I would drop him, and we talked about this on the emergency pod. I would drop him for I think at this point, the pitcher that went back to the Nationals in that deal.
In Josiah Gray. The team also acquired Danny Duffy. He's still a couple of weeks, maybe a month away from returning. So it'll be interesting to see how they want to use him. Maybe a reliever, long relief, maybe as a starter. If that happens, then we could see both David Price and Gonsolin out of the rotation. Trey Turner entering his final year of arbitration next year. So he is under contract through 2022 with the Dodgers, currently on the COVID IL, just having a ridiculous year. 322 batting average, 18 homers, 21 steals. He is the fifth ranked player in Roto this season and joins a lineup that was already second in baseball in runs per game at 5.18. It sounds like as of now, Trey Turner is going to play second base for the Dodgers, Scott. And I think the bigger takeaway, you could talk about Turner as well, obviously, is that one of, or multiple, Cody Bellinger, AJ Pollock, Chris Taylor are going to lose some playing time here.
Yeah, they have to. I mean, assuming Corey Seager makes it back, he's scheduled to return Friday. So, you know, that's today. Corey Seager, he hasn't played since May 15th, and we've seen plenty of injured players suffer setbacks in their get re-injured, really, more than a setback. So who knows? But supposedly Corey Seager's about to be back. He's going to play shortstop. If there's an issue there, obviously Trey Turner could slide over to shortstop. But since it seems like he's playing second base, that slides Max Muncy to first. That slides Cody Bellinger to the outfield, which is already occupied by AJ Pollock. But they also need to move Chris Taylor to the outfield since Corey Seager's coming back. Taylor had been playing shortstop. He was an all-star this year. Presumably they want him in the lineup every day. My suspicion is that Bellinger and Pollock platoon in center field in some way. I don't know if it'll be strict lefty-righty. I mean, they're three games back of the Giants. At some point, they have to prioritize winning over rehabilitating Cody Bellinger. And my guess is that point is now. So I really am not counting on Cody Bellinger. Maybe he'll get hot, turn things around all of a sudden, and it'll be like, why would they ever consider sitting this guy? But I'm really not counting on Cody Bellinger for much anymore. I'm concerned about Pollock. I think Chris Taylor will get his at-bat still. It may not be quite every day. He might move around a lot, but I think Chris Taylor is still going to get to play enough that his value doesn't change that much. As for Trey Turner specifically, he might have to bat lower in the lineup. Maybe not, but they have a lot of high OBP guys that it would make sense to hit in front of him rather than behind him. And maybe he runs less on a team full of high OBP big power guys. I think those are the two concerns for Taylor, or for Turner, for Trey Turner. So the trade-off there, gaining eligibility at second base, probably. But he might be in not as good a spot for his abilities, just because the lineup is constructed the way it is.
The big prospects that the Nationals got back in this trade, again, catcher Keibert Ruiz, he's 23 years old, was crushing it at AAA. 311 batting average, 16 homers, a 1012 OPS, only 9% rostered right now on CBS. And Josiah Gray, who we've seen a little bit from this year, has a 20.8% swinging strike rate, only eight innings pitched, so it's a super small sample size, but his numbers in his minor league career have been really, really strong as well. So between Ruiz and Gray, where would you be looking to add either or both of those guys?
Well, Gray would be the first priority. I think he has the better chance of just claiming a spot on the big league roster right away. He was already up for the Dodgers. That swing and miss ability he showed. I mean, the eight innings, he gave up six earned runs. He gave up four home runs. So the results haven't been that good. But to come up and miss that many bats, major league bats right away, I mean, it speaks the world of his ability. I think a lot more of Josiah Gray now, having seen him a little in the majors, than I did before. And that potential is obviously very attractive at a position where there's always a need. So, you know, unless we hear he's getting sent down, obviously that changes it. But he has a better chance of sticking with the Nationals than he did with the Dodgers, frankly. And so I'm more excited about him with this deal. Keibert Ruiz is probably major league ready away as well. Big power breakout at AAA this year after making some adjustments at the alternate site last year. He's always had a great contact rate. I mean, like a Jose Altuve-like contact rate in the minors. So if he has legit power too, you're talking a high upside catcher. But, you know, I think there's an even better chance he doesn't start out with a major league club. It's possible, but maybe not. And even if he does, just because so many prospects have had trouble transitioning to the majors lately. I'd need to see some production from Weiz at the major league level before picking him up. So he would be out of my top 12 to start out at that position.
In any two catcher leagues, I think you should definitely take a shot on Ruiz. Just see what happens next couple of weeks if he gets an opportunity to play. We did this exercise on the emergency podcast, but I said if he was starting as soon as he went over to the Nationals, he wound up right around the 12-13 range in Scott's rankings. So right around Yadier Molina, Sean Murphy, Mike Zunino, just ahead of those names. So that's only if Ruiz were playing as soon as he gets traded to the Nationals. Anthony Rizzo, next trade up here to the Yankees, turning 32 years old in actually 10 days. So happy early birthday, Anthony Rizzo. Not having a great year. He was coming around recently, last 7 days, 308 batting average, 3 home runs, great ballpark, great lineup to hit in. Any thoughts on Rizzo?
Yeah, it was funny the way this played out. We did a separate emergency pod for that one. And so we've just been so many emergencies here. We're going to have a heart attack.
It's a lot.
Anthony Rizzo, I was able to find on Baseball Savant the breakdown of how many home runs a player would have hit if he was playing all his games at each specific park. Anthony Rizzo has hit 14 home runs this year. That's how many he actually has in real life. But if he had been playing all his games at Yankee Stadium based on the way the ball traveled, so it's not taking in like environmental factors, you know, so it's obviously not gospel truth, but based on the way his batted balls have traveled, if he had been playing at Yankee Stadium, instead of having 14 home runs, he'd have 23.
What?
That is a big difference. Big difference. And it's the most that he would have at any stadium by that criteria. So he seems perfectly suited for Yankee Stadium. Obviously a left-handed hitter. I'd kind of been writing him off in recent weeks. Oh, he's kind of just a guy now, but like he's hitting the ball harder than he ever has before, which owes something to the new baseball, I know, but by like a considerable margin, and still has a great contact rate. And I think this change in environment could really suit him more than even somebody like Joey Gallo going to Yankee Stadium, because it doesn't matter how far you hit them out after all. So I think stock definitely up for Anthony Rizzo with this move.
Next up, one we haven't talked about yet, Kyle Schwarber heads over to the Boston Red Sox in exchange for 20-year-old pitching prospect Aldo Ramirez. And Schwarber currently on the IL with that hamstring injury. He did take batting practice last week, so maybe we see him early, mid-August. And you remember what Schwarber was doing. In June, he hit 280 with 16 home runs alone. What do you think about this move, Scott?
Well, Fenway Park is not an ideal spot for left-handed power hitters. We did not do an emergency pod for this one. It was, you know, it wasn't an emergency, right? It was just kind of,
Scott,
there was kind of a chill trade.
Let's just call it for what it is. There is no way we were doing an emergency podcast for Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah, well, an injured Kyle Schwarber, certainly. So let's see. He actually has, I'll do this on the spot here. He actually has 25 home runs this year. If he'd played all his games at Fenway Park, he'd have 21. That's not a huge difference. And obviously, he's not going to play all his games at Fenway Park anyway. So, you know, the ballpark could be better for him. But I think it's just a matter of, you know, is he going to hit the ground running when he comes back? Because he's kind of a streaky player.
And that wasn't a slight on Schwarber or the Red Sox. It's just this trade came out as soon as we published the Max Scherzer podcast. So we just didn't have enough time to do an emergency
an emergency podcast for literally every trade.
Yeah, we didn't do one for this next trade.
Nothing's
either.
An emergency anymore.
That's right. Cesar Hernandez went to the White Sox for left-handed pitcher Connor Pilkington, who has strong numbers at AA this season. Cesar Hernandez already has a career high in home runs this season. He has 18 home runs. He's obviously joining a really good White Sox lineup. He is, I didn't write it down, but I think it's right around 65% rostered, Scott. Are you even more excited now to add Cesar Hernandez?
Yeah, I guess.
62% rostered.
I don't know. I don't see a big change here for Cesar Hernandez. Right. I guess the lineup's a little deeper. He's had a weird year because more home run power than ever before, but he's traded off a lot of his ability to hit for average. I assume his fly ball rate must be up.
Apparently, he hasn't stolen a base over the last two seasons.
Yeah, so that's not even really part of his game anymore. He used to be kind of a high OBP, you know, moderate base stealer who also had a little bit of pop, but he's really sold out for the power this year. And, you know, for points leagues, I don't know. I think his value is pretty much, even though the way he goes about it has changed, is pretty much the same. He's kind of a usable but clearly not high-end player at the position. In Roto, I think you'd rather have more average and stolen bases from him, but he's usable there too. I don't think going to the White Sox really changes that.
A name to watch, Andrés Giménez, who we remember came over in the Francisco Lindor trade. He has second, third base, shortstop eligibility. He had a really, really strong June in the minors, July not so much, but I would guess he's going to get an opportunity to play down the stretch for Cleveland. Let's quickly talk about some bullpen, Scott. Don't want to spend too much on this, but try to figure out just who is the closer for these teams. Brad Hand went to the Blue Jays. Who do you think closes there? Is it Jordan Romano or Hand?
My guess is it's matchups based with the lefty-righty situation. If I had to invest in one, I'd invest in Romano because I think he's a better pitcher now. And you know, it's hard to remove a guy from the closer role who's doing well in it, as Romano has been.
Daniel Hudson, who is currently on the COVID IL, was traded to the Padres, and Kyle Finnegan picked up his first save of the season, thrown right into the fire on Thursday, game one of their doubleheader. It was an early game. We find out about Brad Hand and Daniel Hudson's on the IL at that point. And he just steps in and he does a good job. Kyle Finnegan, 3% rostered. So are you feeling more confident now that he will be the Nationals closer?
I'm not feeling confident in that at all. No, okay. he has a whip near 1.5. And, you know, he had been the seventh inning guy with Daniel Hudson pitching the eighth. It's possible Hudson gets traded and never gets a chance. But if he doesn't, he comes back from the IL soon enough.
He was traded, Scott.
Oh, I'm sorry. Daniel Hudson was traded.
Yeah, he was traded to the Padres.
Okay, I suppose you just said that.
Yeah, I did.
Sorry, I was looking up Kyle Finnegan.
It's all good.
Yeah, okay. So, I don't know. Tanner Rainey got the save chance in game two. It didn't go well. He ended up blowing it, I believe. But he was he was considered like a closer in waiting coming into the season, had a rough year. Been on the IL till very recently. I don't know. I guess Kyle Finnegan would be the first pick there, but I doubt he's just the guy now. I suspect they're going to move. They're going to try it a few different guys in the role.
Yeah, Tanner Rainey has an ERA over 7 this season, so not sure about him. Wander Suero, I guess, could work his way in, but his numbers are not good. This is going to be a rough situation, but I think Kyle Finnegan is the guy for now. If you play in deeper roto leagues, category leagues, and you need saves, I would target Kyle Finnegan. We had Diego Castillo traded to the Mariners for reliever JT Chargois and third base prospect Austin Shenton. Who do you think? Actually, we did get a little bit more clarity. I retweeted, there was a quote from, it was either Scott Servais or Jerry DePoto that said, they are going to lean on Diego Castillo more so as their closer. Do you believe it?
Well, that was coming from the GM. And I don't know exactly how the Mariners hierarchy works, but most GMs leave that call to the manager. So, you know, it's still more to go on than what we have. But Scott Servais hasn't been the most role-oriented manager to begin with. And, you know, Diego Castillo isn't as good as Kendall Graveman. He's not as good as Paul Sewald, in my opinion. So I think Sewald will still be a factor there, but clearly it doesn't sound like you can drop Castillo.
In Tampa Bay, a closer has no name. We know that. But Nick Anderson is working his way back. He's currently in AAA rehabbing. They have Andrew Kittredge there, who has pitched very well, and obviously JT Chargois comes back in this trade. So is it just by committee, Tampa Bay?
Yeah, it's got to be. I mean, I have no idea who I'd pick first there with Fairbanks on the IL.
Yep.
And Fire Eisen on the IL. I mean, it might be Chagua. They like to use Andrew Kittredge in kind of a multi-inning role. He's been great this year, but, you know, he hasn't really been that much in the closer mix before. I have no idea. It's the race. Just gotta kind of just gotta wait and see. Kittredge will at least give you good ratios if it ends up being him.
Yeah, he would be my pick for the next save, but my pick to lead the team in saves rest of season would be Nick Anderson once he rejoins the team. Ryan Tepera was also traded away from the Cubs. If they trade Craig Kimbrell on Friday, Scott, do you just have a name in Chicago that you would target?
Well, it would have been Dylan Maples, but he just went on the IL too with a blister, I believe.
I'll look that up for you.
Yeah. So I guess it would be Dan Winkler would be the next guy I'd look at. I don't really think he has I don't really see him like seizing the role outright. I could see them wanting to. I could see them giving Maples that shot more than, you know, if he's not out long. I could see them giving Maples a more permanent look than they do Winkler. And also, let's see, what's that guy's name who got a shot last year?
Rowan Wick.
Yeah, Rowan Wick. He's supposed to be back from the IL soon. So I don't think he's that good. But he could factor as well. I think they'll be trying out a few guys for a while.
It was a blister for Maples. Dan Winkler currently 0% rostered on CBS. So we just threw a bunch of names at you, all different sizes of leagues. If you need saves, there is a lot of options that are currently available. Names that we haven't seen moved yet, but could happen on Friday. Javier Baez, Chris Bryant, Craig Kimbrell, Trevor Story, Jose Berríos. I have a feeling it's going to be a pretty busy Friday for us, Scott. How about we talk about some of the games and things that actually happened?
Oh, my goodness gracious.
All right, Scott, I'm going to get us started here with Luis Patino, who dominated my New York Yankees on Thursday. 6 shutout, 3 hits, 2 walks, 8 strikeouts, 19 swinging strikes on 97 pitches, a 37% CSW. That's called strikes plus swinging strikes. League average is 28%. So it was really nice to see that the control was there for him, and he was basically just dominating in this game. 25% rostered is Luis Patino, Scott. Your interest level in him, who would you rather add, him or JoJo Gray?
JoJo as in Josiah Gray?
Yes, sir.
Some people call him JoJo.
Yeah, I was watching the Dodgers broadcast the other day. They were calling him that.
Patino. Patino has a job. He's been getting the pitch count up. This was his first 6-inning start, but the previous 2 were 5 1/3. Clearly, he has great stuff himself. He's like considered a higher-end prospect than Gray. And, I mean, like legitimately a high-end prospect, like top 25 in all the majors type prospect. So I think if we were with another organization, we would have hyped him up quite a bit by now. It's just the Rays have such unconventional ways of using their pitchers that it wasn't so obvious Patino was going to be usable, but it sure looks like he is now. This is the kind of start that I think justifies an immediate pickup.
Would you prioritize Patino ahead of any of Tuki Toussaint, Tyler McGill, Brad Keller, Austin Gomber? Those are 4 of the top 7 most added starting pitchers.
Oh boy.
Toussaint, McGill, Keller, Gomber.
Part of me wants to say all of them. Part of me wants to say none of them. I think Patino has the most upside of the group. But he's obviously shown the least so far. So it's kind of a trade-off there.
And I would say
definitely over Brad Keller. I would say over Tyler McGill. Right. You know, it's awesome that he came out of nowhere and has been pretty good, but I have doubts about him. And maybe over Toussaint too. That's a little hard after 2 great starts from Toussaint, but yeah, Patino over Toussaint. I think I'd draw the line at Gomber, but Gomber pitching half his games at Coors Field, he could just blow up one day.
Oh my goodness gracious, player for you from Thursday, Scott.
Frankie Montas. Frankie Montas is turning. This is his final form. Frankie Montas has evolved into his final form here. 7 shutout innings, 10 strikeouts. And, you know, he's been on a really good run here lately, particularly in terms of missing bats. He's suddenly become this like bat missing extraordinaire. And it's so this is his third straight double digit strikeout effort in four. I said third straight. Third double digit strikeout effort in four for Frankie Montas. All three of them more than 20 swinging strikes. He had 24 in this one. Yes, the reason for it is because he's throwing his splitter, which was the key to his breakout 2 years ago. Remember, we were discouraged last year because we saw him throwing it even less and he had a bad year. It seems like he's finally figured out that it's his best pitch, or he just has a good feel for it finally, because suddenly it's become his primary pitch. Even 2 years ago when he was breaking out, it's not like he was throwing it a ton. I think it was like his third most used pitch. It was just very effective. But now he's throwing it more than anything else. He threw it 38% of the time in this one. It was responsible for 13 of those 24 swinging strikes. And Frankie Montas looks awesome now. It looks like your patience with him is going to be rewarded.
Absolutely. Just a ridiculous performance against the Angels. 7 shutout, 10 strikeouts. He was leading all qualified starting pitchers in swinging strikes for the month of July before this 24 swinging strike rate effort. And his last 6 starts, a 2.49 ERA, including Thursday. So yeah, Montas is back. The guy looks ridiculous. Scott, was that a Pokemon reference or a Dragon Ball Z reference, or neither? Because you said this is his final form, final evolution.
I don't know. It's just kind of the thing people say online. It's kind of online speak. It always reminded me of like, you play the old school RPG game.
Oh yeah.
On the video, the video game RPG, like you'd be fighting like a boss, right? And you'd think you'd have him beat, but he'd really just be like turning into another form, you know?
Oh, I know.
Yeah. So that's what it always reminded me of. I don't know if that's what it's actually a reference to, but that's what I always pictured when people say he's reached his final form.
Another truly amazing performance outside of Montas that we have to highlight here at the top. Joe Musgrove up against the Rockies. They were in San Diego, so obviously it's a very strong matchup for him. 7 shutout, 3 hits, 1 walk, 11 strikeouts, 21 swinging strikes on 91 pitches for Joe Musgrove. He used his slider and curveball a combined 64% of the time in this start. That's just 50% for the season, so he did see an uptick there. His previous 5 starts before this one, 6.29 ERA. Scott, fantasy trade deadlines are also approaching. Would you look to sell high on Musgrove after the start?
I think so.
Ooh.
Yeah. I mean, he's just been so unreliable, and in so many ways, it's not like there have been a few too many runs, but everything underneath looks awesome still. Everything has been all over the place, all over the place. And I kind of wonder if it's because he throws 6 pitches and it just leaves him so much margin for error every start.
Mm-hmm.
Finding that right sequence. I wonder if it's just too much because he's become such a weird player to evaluate as Joe Musgrove. I think he's capable of starts like this, but they've been too few and far between lately.
This pitcher was not amazing, but worth mentioning. A nice little bounce back here for Hyunjin Ryu at the Red Sox. 6 shutout with 5 strikeouts, 11 swinging strikes on 87 pitches. Did a great job limiting hard contact against a really strong lineup. There was no Rafael Devers in this one, so keep that in mind. But another one, his previous 9 starts before this one, 4.35 ERA, 1.34 whip. I don't think that we are in the clear yet, Scott, but this was a really positive step for Hyunjin Ryu.
It was. I don't really think I have anything to add to that.
Would you try and sell high on him after this one too, if you can?
I don't think it's going to.
It's not going to work.
Inflate his value in the way it would Musgrove's. And to be honest, I feel like I have a better read on Ryu. Yeah, he hasn't been quite as good as we want him to be, but I still think the floor is pretty high.
Hey, real quick. I know it's something that you guys used to do here on the podcast. Joey Votto, I mean, it finally took us 30 minutes to get to him in this podcast, but just have to highlight, he hit another home run, his 20th home run of the season on Thursday. He now has 8 home runs over his last 6 games and finally admitted that he is trying to hit for more power, which we all suspected, but it was pretty cool to see.
No, he said that last year. He said that last September. Yep. When he started hitting more home runs, that he realized the approach that won him the MVP doesn't work anymore because he's getting old. And so he needs to not worry so much about striking out and just let it rip. And Joey Votto's pretty good self-evaluator, it turns out.
Hey, real quick, Freddy Peralta had a great start. 6 shutout with 5 strikeouts against the Pirates. However, he only threw 68 pitches in this start. So now over his last 2 starts, it's 68 pitches. It's 51 pitches. Someone tweeted at me after the start and they said, are you going to move him back up? Because I lowered Freddy Peralta in my rankings. I think I dropped him down to SP24, SP25, something like that. I'm not going to move him up, Scott, because as great as he was here, he's still below 70 pitches.
I mean, that's a pretty good ranking.
Yeah, it's still very good.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to pull back on him a little in the second half. They've admitted as much. I don't think it's going to be 4 innings every time, but it's going to be less predictable from start to start how many innings he gives you.
All right, before we hit the news and notes, quickly promote the MLB trade deadline is rapidly approaching. Sure is. And you should be listening to Nothing Personal with David Sampson to be your guide. David Sampson ran a Major League Baseball team for 18 years, so he's no stranger to how trades go down, why trades get accepted, or why offers get a hard no. Nothing Personal will have more than just winners and losers. David will provide expert insight and analysis on every trade. No matter what goes down at the deadline, remember, it's just business. It's nothing personal. Some news and notes we'll quickly run through here. Mike Trout received an MRI on Thursday and was encouraged with the results. Even with that, he remains without a timetable, and the Angels are also consider moving Mike Trout to a corner outfield spot. Don't think that really changes his value much, but hoping to see you soon, Mike Trout, because we need you, man. Bryce Harper was removed from Game 2 of Thursday's doubleheader with back spasms, something that he's dealt with off and on all season. I kind of thought he was past it because he's having a pretty good July, but again, rears its ugly head for Bryce Harper. Rafael Devers was out of the lineup on Thursday with that quad injury as expected. Eloy Jimenez was also out with that groin strain. After getting hit by a pitch on his elbow on Wednesday, Lourdes Gurriel had x-rays come back negative and is considered day-to-day. Rhys Hoskins exited Thursday with a left groin injury. Nico Horner was placed on the IL with a right oblique strain. Luis Severino returned. Nope, that's not true. Brendan Crawford returned and went 1-for-3 with a double and 2 RBI. My eyes are just blending words together at this point, Scott. Luis Severino will begin a rehab assignment on Tuesday in the minors. So good news there for Severino. Tanner Houck, not great news. He was optioned to AAA on Thursday. He'll be recalled next week to start one of the doubleheader games in Toronto. That's August 7th. But even with that, Scott, he's looked good, Tanner Houck. I think it's going to be one of those things where he's just the extra man on the team for the doubleheader, and then he probably gets sent back down, especially with Chris Sale coming.
Yeah, and it sounds like the Red Sox, it's possible they acquire a starting pitcher too. I know they were in on Scherzer. Obviously, that didn't happen. But Jose Berrios is still out there. There are still other arms they could acquire, and it doesn't seem like they're that committed to giving Houck an extended look here.
Mike Moustakas could begin a rehab assignment at AAA early next week. He's 65% rostered. Would you be looking to stash him anywhere?
Deeper roto leagues.
Terry Francona will step away for the remainder of the season to focus on health issues. So get well soon, Tito. And Hector Santiago, who previously was suspended 10 games for the first one caught with the sticky substances, has been suspended for 80 games after testing positive for exogenous testosterone. Don't know much about that. At least it wasn't beaver tranquilizer. Scott's latest prospect report is currently live on the site. We can't spend too much time on this, but the new 5 that are on the verge, Bobby Witt, you know, Joe Adell, you know, Edward Cabrera, you know, Jose Miranda, third baseman for the Minnesota Twins. We've talked about him quite a bit recently, graduates inside the 5 on the verge, as does starting pitcher Reed Detmers with the Los Angeles Angels. Scott, anything? Yeah, we talk about these guys quite a bit. Detmers recently promoted to AAA. If the Angels trade any starting pitchers on Friday, I guess that would increase Reed Detmers' chances.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a long shot. Anybody I'm going to put in that 5th spot now is a long shot. Mm-hmm. But his first start after moving up to AAA was great. I believe he struck out 9 in 6 innings. So you know, I don't know how much more he has to prove in the minors, but he was just their first round pick last year. Not a young guy, but it would still be a rush for a team that's barely in it, you know? Yeah, I'm more excited about Jose Miranda, and we've talked about the ridiculous numbers he's put up. I think combined with the low strikeout rate, like it's, I feel like if he doesn't exhaust rookie eligibility this year, he's going to show up surprisingly high on prospect list next year, or at least he should, because it's, I'm not really seeing what there is to complain about for Jose Miranda. He's not a great fielder at third base, I guess. And he's been playing some first base in the minors, been playing some second base. But for our purposes, it's actually good that he's been getting that exposure at different positions, because his arrival doesn't necessarily depend on Josh Donaldson getting traded, though that would obviously help.
Scott's five prospects that are on the periphery: Royals catcher MJ Melendez, Rockies outfielder Zach Veen, that was their first round pick from the 2020 draft, Dodgers second baseman Michael Busch, now Texas Rangers second baseman Ezekiel Duran, Rockies third baseman L.A. Harris Montero. Those are the five on the periphery. You can read more about them on the site, cbssports.com/fantasy/baseball. And I did just want to provide a little bit of an update here. Some big name prospects that have recently returned from injury includes Marco Luciano with the San Francisco Giants and Emerson Hancock with the Seattle Mariners. We are going to take a quick break, but when we return, we're going to help you get ready for next week here on Fantasy Baseball Today. Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com. The Week 19 Pitcher and Hitter Planners presented by Line & Kugels. And let's get things started with some two-start pitchers. Scotty, who you got?
Well, Frank, I think we probably need to go over this list together, because normally I spend the Thursday leading up to the podcast putting together these lists, but instead I was reacting to trades. So we're going to do this the way we used to do it with Adam Azer.
Let's do it.
We'll open the two-start pitchers list. Sorry, Line & Kugels, for ruining your segment. But who we got here? So among those rostered in less than 80% of leagues, why don't you go through the list there, Frank, and I'll double check to make sure I actually have them as two start pitchers.
All right. So we are going with under 80% rostered, you said, right?
Yep.
All right. So that would include Patrick Corbin up against the Phillies and the Braves. No, we could drop Patrick Corbin, right? Like, just be gone.
Yeah.
He's still 77% rostered. So Tyler McGill at the Marlins and at the Phillies.
Yep, that looks legit. And I think especially with that Marlins matchup, he's pretty close to a must.
Steven Matz versus Cleveland and versus the Red Sox.
Nah.
No. Chris Flexen at Tampa Bay and at the Yankees.
No. We got roughed up last time, and those are some not so great matchups. I think that would be strictly a points league play.
And he's been much better at home this season versus on the road. Chris Flexen has. Madison Bumgarner versus the Giants. Ooh, revenge game. And at the Padres.
Yeah, I mean, he was it today that he pitched?
No,
it was yesterday.
It was Wednesday. 7 innings, 2 runs against the Rangers.
Yeah, the velocity hasn't been very good since he came back, and the strikeouts have been almost non-existent, even though it's been 3 decent starts in a row for Bumgarner. So I would say no to him.
Yeah, and his spin rates are down around 300 RPM on all of his main pitches. So
yeah,
it's rough. Johnny Cueto, who actually had a pretty good start on Thursday against the Dodgers, trying to pull up what his line was here. It was 5 2/3 shutout with 5 strikeouts, and he's been better recently. He is at the Diamondbacks, at the Brewers, 56% rostered. I think this one might work, Scott.
I agree. Those two matchups and the fact that his last 3 starts have been they haven't been quality starts because some of them have been short, but Johnny Cueto, I stopped short of saying I trust him, but these matchups are good enough that I'd take a shot on him if I was just looking for volume.
Zach Davies at the Rockies versus the White Sox?
No.
No.
Willy Peralta?
No.
That experiment's over, right?
Yeah, that's over.
Dane Dunning versus the Angels and at Oakland?
Should have traded me Willy Peralta in the Dynasty League when you had the chance, Frank.
Yeah.
Just pointed it out. Just pointed it out.
You are right. Who else?
Dane Dunning.
Who else was I giving you in that trade?
Caleb Smith. Oh, it was those two for Dalton Jeffries.
Right? I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, it's
Dane Dunning.
It was going to be a pretty low consequence trade, probably. Dane Dunning is a no for me.
Adrian Hauser at home versus the Pirates and the Giants.
I could see doing it in a points league, but it's not very exciting.
Scrolling through here, Garrett Richards, no. Jose Suarez, no. Michael Wacha versus the Mariners at the Orioles. 3.60 ERA in the month of July.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't have a lot of faith in Michael Wacha, but his last start was great in every respect. And he's had two starts in July that were like that, just very inconsistent. Those matchups are really good, though. And I think there's sleeper potential for Wacha. I wouldn't recommend him for everybody, though.
All right. Jordan Lyles, a couple more names here. Jordan Lyles versus the Angels and at Oakland?
I don't think so.
Chad Kuhl at the Brewers, at the Reds?
Nah.
Last one here, Chris Bubich at the White Sox, at the Cardinals. His last three starts, he's gone at least six innings.
And they were quality starts.
Two earned runs or less in all of them.
No, though. No.
All right, I tried my best to build up Chris Bubich there. All right, so some two-star pitchers, we went through all of them. Some ones that you can focus on there.
Johnny Cueto was one. Michael Wacha. Those were the most available ones. Tyler McGill, if he happens to be available in your league. I think those were the standouts, right?
Yes. Madison Bumgarner, we didn't like. Yeah, those were the ones that stood out most. All right, Scott, some sleeper hitters who are rostered in less than 80% of leagues. You have any names there you could throw us?
I think we're going to have to go through this one together, too. I do have the five best matchups for you, though. The number one is the Blue Jays. They're the only team playing eight games this week. Number two is the Rockies. They're at home for all six of their games. Number three is the Yankees. Number four is the Marlins. And number five is the Braves.
Mm.
So, for the Rockies, CJ Cron and Brendan Rodgers immediately jump out as guys you could potentially look at using. They're not in the five best matchups, but I do like the White Sox matchups this week. So newly acquired Cesar Hernandez would be a fine play. I think Andrew Vaughn, you could look into playing him. The Reds, I do like their matchups too. I don't know that we can get away with calling Joey Votto a sleeper anymore. And I think we're past that point with Jonathan India too.
Ooh, I have a name for you there then. Kyle Farmer. The guy is absolutely on fire right now. He went 3-for-5 on Thursday. He's batting .394 with four home runs and 1139 OPS in July. His line drive rate this month is exactly double his strikeout rate. 34% line drives, 17% strikeout rate. In deep leagues, Kyle Farmer, I like it.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of legitimacy to Farmer, but he's so hot right now. FarmersOnly.com.
I was about to make a reference myself. Gio Urshela, maybe in some shallower leagues, he's 80% rostered. So
yeah,
maybe a 10-teamer.
I also like the Tigers matchups. And so, you know, Robbie Grossman and Akil Baddoo, we've been recommending them a lot lately. Also, Jamer Candelario has been hot. Eric Haas has been hot. So there are a few guys you could look to there. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm just gonna have to point you to the sleeper hitters column on the website. It might be up later in the day, Friday, than it used to be, since, again, a little behind schedule here. But it'll be up. It'll be up going into the weekend for sure.
One other name that I'll throw out there, the Marlins, you said, are in this best matchups for week 19. And Brian Anderson is someone that we brought up recently as well. So I will just throw his name out there. And also the Braves. The Braves are part of that. So potentially Jock Peterson. And by the way, We received an awesome email from Chris. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the last name, but from Chris.
Towers?
It was not Chris Towers, but he sent this soundbite in of his son doing the Jock Peterson impression that Adam used to do. So, Jock Peterson, like that. And
that you don't get.
No, that I don't get because I haven't seen, what is it, Ferris Bueller's Day Off? I still haven't seen it. So, here it is.
Jock Peterson.
That's pretty good there.
Jock Peterson.
That was awesome. So we do appreciate anything that you guys want to send
in. Doing it in the woods or are those crickets chirping in the background?
He actually sent it a video too, and his it looks like his son is ready to play some baseball or wiffle ball or something there. So
okay.
Yeah, that was awesome. We do appreciate you sending that in for us, Chris. The worst hitter matchups for week 19, the Astros, the Twins, the Dodgers, the Royals, and the Padres. So there you have it, the week 19 pitcher and hitter planners presented by Line and Kugels. And I'm shipping out to Arizona on Saturday. It's going to be very hot out there in the desert, so I'll need a nice cold beverage to cool me down. That is Line and Kugels Summer Shandy. Exactly what I'll be drinking. The perfect blend of crisp lemonade and refreshing beer. Gonna have to meet up with my guy, the Welsh, too. Maybe we'll grab a summer shandy together. And that's not all they offer. They also have a Session Helles, which has all the flavor of a crisp German-style beer, but it's only 99 calories. And if you're into IPAs, Line & Kugels has their Lemon Haze IPA. It's a well-balanced hazy IPA that blends hops with delicious lemonade. So no matter what type of beverage you're craving, Line and Kugels has you covered. Just head on over to liney.com. That's L-E-I-N-I-E.com. Or follow Line and Kugels on Instagram or Facebook for more information about all of the delicious beers that they brew. All right, let's fire it up. The Furryometer, which is, again, just the Worryometer on a Friday. Gerrit Cole, I guess we have to talk about it again, right? Because he kind of got bombed against Tampa Bay, a team that knows him very well. 5 1/3 innings pitched, 6 hits, 8 runs. 7 of those were earned. He did leave the start with 5 earned runs, and then a reliever came in and let those runs score. Did have 10 strikeouts. Did have 23 swinging strikes.
Right.
But I'll point out again, 10 starts since the beginning of June. Now a 4.71 ERA for Gerrit Cole.
Yeah.
Worryometer, Scott.
I only like a 3 because he had the 2 great starts prior to this one. And certainly the stuff was great in this one still. You know, I might even say a 2. I think Chris has described it this way before, where how this is probably going to play out with the spin rates being down. And, you know, they haven't been down the same amount consistently for Cole, but they were down a pretty good amount in this one. They're still going to be great a lot of the time, just not as great as consistently. And I think that's what we're seeing here. But overall, I still think, like, I think Cole would be the pitcher I want, second only to DeGrom.
Yeah, he's number 2 in my rankings. Maybe that changes with Max Scherzer, but I mean, we're splitting hairs at that point. Carlos Rodon at the Royals on Thursday, 4 innings, 8 hits, 4 runs, 9 hard hit balls allowed. His fastball and slider were both down 1.5 miles per hour. Now, that's 2 starts in a row where his velocity has been down around that mark. Last 6 starts for Rodon, he's got a 4.06 ERA. The Furryometer on Carlos Rodon.
I'll go as high as 3 on that one, but it's still going to, you know, it's still pretty low for me. I worry that, you know, maybe first full year back from Tommy John surgery, maybe the innings are getting to a point where his performance is going to suffer, but they've done a pretty good job of limiting his innings over the course of this season. It's not, you know, the total he's at right now isn't so bad, all things considered. I think what's worth pointing out as far as the velocity specifically goes is that, let me see if I have this right here. So what's his season average for velocity? Do you have that there?
It's 95.9 miles per hour on the fastball.
Yeah, for the season. In April, he was averaging 94.9. Like, okay. The velocity's been going up over the course of the season. So there's been some fluctuation throughout for Rodon. And so, you know, a drop of a mile per hour and a half. In his case, you know, on a one-off start, it would be not be much of a concern for anybody. The fact it's back-to-back starts, okay, but it's still a velocity he was doing great with earlier in the year.
My guy Lance Davis in the YouTube chat, just throw this up for a second. You can borrow my copy of Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I appreciate that, Lance. Honestly, I don't even need a copy of it. Just let me know what streaming device it's on, and I'll try to watch it some point soon because I actually do want to watch it. So I appreciate the help there, Lance Davis. All right, so Carlos Rodon, not really worried about it. Let's transition into the drop-o-meter here, Scott. Eduardo Escobar, Eduardo Rodriguez, man, all these trades are, I'm all over the place. Eduardo Rodriguez up against the Blue Jays, 3 1/3, 6 runs allowed, 4 walks, 8 strikeouts. It is the 9th time this season he's allowed 4+ runs, earned runs, in a start. He's still 83% rostered. Scott, the drop-o-meter on Erod.
I would say, I'll say 5. No, I would drop him for Luis Patino if it came to it, but I'd rather not drop him. He's been, you know, I talked about how difficult Musgrove has been to assess this year, but Eduardo Rodriguez has been the most difficult pitcher to assess because, like, he had 18 swinging strikes in this one, I believe. His swinging strike rate all year long is very steady with previous years. His xFIP is 331. It looked like he was getting back on track. His previous 4 starts or 5 starts were all pretty good. There was a 1-inning start. I guess 6 starts technically, because one of them, it was only a 1-inning situation. I'm not sure what happened there. But let's pretend that one didn't happen. the others were fine. So it seemed like he was getting back on track. The underlying numbers are all very good for Eduardo Rodriguez. And I don't know why the performance hasn't been there. I don't know, but I'd rather not drop him.
Last one, Taijuan Walker up against the Braves. 5 innings, 5 runs allowed. Still had 7 strikeouts, but has 16 earned runs over his last 3 starts. That is 9 1/3 innings pitched. I thought there was going to be regression at some point, but it is smacking us in the face here, Scott.
The regression has come for Taijuan Walker. Yeah, during those 3 starts, his ERA has gone from, drumroll please, looking at Wednesday's numbers. His ERA, Taijuan Walker's ERA in 3 starts has gone from 250 to 371. And what I find interesting about that, suddenly the xFIP's up to 424.
Mm.
Okay, I thought his xFIP was high threes. So, you know, looked like he had brought his ERA up to the xFIP. But nope, xFIP's just plain bad. Mm. And a lot less confidence in Taijuan Walker now, I'd say.
Where is he on the drop-o-meter?
Right. Well, if I gave Eduardo Rodriguez a 5... I think also a 5 for, okay, Walker.
Drop him for Patino?
Yeah.
All right. Any interest in these players? Let's really breeze through these. Got Kyle Freeland up against the Padres. 6 innings, 1 run, 4 strikeouts. He's only 9% rostered. His last 7 starts, he has a 1.98 ERA. Any interest?
Very low. Like, his improvement has coincided with increased slider usage, and so I find that interesting. But still, the underlying numbers aren't great during this good stretch.
Josh Harrison went 3 for 5 with his 6th home run. He's quietly batting 294 with an 800 OPS, 36% rostered. Any interest?
Nah, just as a deep league play. I have interest in leagues where it's probably obvious you'd have interest.
Patrick Wisdom hit his 16th home run, yet he still has a 39% strikeout rate in July. He's 38% rostered.
Well, I assume he's going to play every day now. With Rizzo gone, and probably doesn't matter if Bryant's going to be traded, but is he going to be good? It's funny. I thought Sarah Koss was the one who was going to fall off of the late 20s minor league sluggers to get a shot in the majors, but Wisdom has fallen off much harder. And I'm not sure he's going to rebound.
Each of Rowdy Tellez and Tyrone Taylor had 3 hits on Thursday. Tellez is batting 378 with 4 home runs in 15 games with the Brewers. Tyrone Taylor, .364 batting average, 3 homers, 2 steals in the month of July. They are both rostered in 10% or less of CBS leagues. But you kind of have to worry about playing time with both of them moving forward. Any interest?
Yeah, I mean, Tellez, with every good game he has, is getting more interesting. And I mean, Taylor, I know I was really excited about Taylor earlier in the season, and then he just couldn't maintain. I would keep an eye on both. I don't think there's much pressure to pick them up at this point.
They are both available in a 15-team Roto League of mine, so in a format like that, I would check to see if either or both Rowdy Tellez and Tyrone Taylor are available. Kyle Farmer, we spoke about, who is kind of interesting, and he has good matchups next week. He's 8% rostered. He has second, third, and shortstop eligibility. Miguel Cabrera went 3-for-3 with a double dong, 15% rostered. Anything, Scott? I mean, look, if Joey Votto can happen, maybe Miguel Cabrera? I don't know.
This was his second and third home runs of July, so it's not like he's really been hot. Yeah, I'm not holding my breath for that.
All right, some notable dingers from Thursday. Vlad Jr. hit his 33rd. Austin Meadows went 3-for-5 with a double dong. He's now at 20 homers. Salvador Perez hit his 25th. Andrew McCutchen went 2-for-3 with his 20th home run. Austin Riley went 2-for-4 with his 21st. Dansby Swanson hit his 18th. Pete Alonso hit his 23rd. And Wilson Contreras hit his 17th. The call to the pen, not many bullpen updates. Will Smith had his 21st save. Mark Melancon got his 32nd. That's it. To stream or not to stream for Friday, Ross Stripling versus the Royals, Martin Perez at the Rays, Zach Thompson versus the Yankees, Tuki Toussaint versus the Brewers, Colby Allard versus the Mariners, and Ryan Weathers versus the Rockies.
So Tuki versus Milwaukee is the one that most clearly stands out there. I could roll the dice on Zach Thompson versus the Yankees on Ross Stripling versus the Royals. But it's more of a gamble in my eyes. I'm not sure the upside is worth the downside.
That's the Blue Jays' return to Rogers Center. So Ross Stripling is going to be pumped up, I think, hopefully. For Saturday, Matt Manning versus the Orioles, John Lester versus the Cubs, Vince Velasquez at the Pirates, Marco Gonzalez at the Rangers, Kyle Muller versus the Brewers, and Josiah Gray. That is not true. He will not be starting against the Diamondbacks anymore. So I'm going to scratch him off this list, Scott. Manning, yep. Lester, Velasquez, Gonzalez, Muller.
Pick on the Brewers again, Kyle Muller. I mean, it's not just picking on the Brewers. I think Muller and Tuki Toussaint, looking at the Friday streamers, both have upside that can take advantage of that kind of matchup. I don't really even halfway like any of the others here. I can force myself to recommend Matt Manning against the Orioles, I guess, but
Marco Gonzalez against the Rangers. I think it was Chris who gave out his expected ERA is horrific.
Over 7, right?
But the Rangers are also horrific, and they don't have Joey Gallo anymore, so I can talk myself into Marco Gonzalez. I'm not actually going to use John Lester against the Cubs, but for similar reasons, if they trade Baez and Bryant, or at least one of them, that lineup is going to look very pitiful. So that is a team that you can look to stream against moving forward. For Sunday, Brad Keller at Toronto, Logan Webb versus the Astros, Mike Foltynewicz versus the Mariners, Vladimir Gutierrez at the Mets, Adber Alzai at the Cubs, Brett Anderson at the Braves. Yikes.
Yikes. Yeah, Jim Halpert gif right there. GIF. I think I called it a GIF. I always call it a GIF.
Yes. Anyway. Yes, Scott. You finally said it right.
That is highly debatable. Anyway, Brad Keller at Toronto. I'm big into Brad now. So I'm fine with that. I know Adbert Alzolay isn't actually at the Cubs because he pitches for the Cubs.
He's at Washington. Sorry.
That one could go okay, but he's given up a lot of home runs lately. I think I might go with Logan Webb over him, even though he's facing the Astros. Oh, man. He's facing the Astros. I stopped saying Astros at the worst possible part of Astros. To stop saying Astros. I don't know if you noticed that.
I was going to let it slide, but you brought it up. Basically, stream pitchers before you get to Sunday. I think that's the biggest takeaway here. Fantasy justice. It's a pretty short one, but let's talk about it. Yeah. From Jordan, we have a team in our league that is currently 5-10 and realistically has no shot at the playoffs. They dropped John Gray and Michael Pineda without picking anybody up in return. Is this suspicious enough to determine collusion, and how should it be handled? Should the commissioner re-add them back on his team, or should it be let go and hope he does not continue to drop players without adding others?
Well, are you sure he wasn't like activating players from the IL? Does he just have empty bench spots now? I'd double check that before you made any accusations. I don't know how your waiver wire is set up, because, I mean, in theory, everybody has a shot at this. I don't know if it's a fab system, in which case really everybody has a shot at it, or if it's a situation, hey, look, I'm top in waiver priority. Why don't you drop this guy for me? I don't know. I mean, I don't know how deep the league is. If it's a standard 12-teamer, it doesn't really raise an eyebrow for me that John Gray and Michael Pineda are being dropped.
John Gray is pretty good.
Yeah, he's pretty good, but
could get traded.
So good that it would shock you if he was dropped in a 12-team league?
No.
I mean, I'd want to pick him up if he was, but
I think it's just the circumstances, right? It's the fact that this team is in last place, and they probably could use John Gray or Pineda, and they're not.
He didn't say they were in last place. They're 5-10.
No, that's true.
But they don't seem to have much of a chance. I don't know. I don't think it's enough to make that kind of accusation on its own, to be honest. Because even if there is a top guy in waiver priority that this person's colluding with, he could only pick up one of these two, you know? It's not like he can get them both. Well, I guess maybe waivers could be set up. Usually not, though. Usually you would go to the back of the line if you picked up one of these two.
Smells a little fishy to me. I don't know. I guess you could just ask the person and see how they handle it. If they get very defensive or something, maybe there's something going on. But, yeah, they're not amazing players. Figure it out. I don't know. We really did not help you here. But that was Fantasy Justice. I just want to play the sound again. Man, we have hit the end of the road here, and I'm sure we're going to have a few more podcasts on Friday, depending on what trades go down. So be on the lookout for those. For Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We, actually not me, Scott and Chris will be back again on Monday. Bye-bye! If you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. What are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood best? And why can't all this information just be in one place? Well, now it is on Homes.com. As somebody who's been through this, I can tell you these features are so, so incredibly valuable. They've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools, and their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. The area you live in is just as important as the house itself. You can get to know a neighborhood without ever setting foot in it. Say you're a really active person. You could find out about the nearest parks. Do they have a baseball field? Maybe you want to join a softball league like Chris and I play in. Also, Homes.com collaboration tools makes it easier than ever to share all this information with your family. It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com. We've done your homework.